Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I can tell you this, this has been interesting. Come to get on the radio show, and guess what? Your password sucks a big one, you know. Good way to start the day. Anyway, welcome to Cosmic Voice. We decided to change the day and the starting time and a few other things, and put myself in the middle of another batch of fun. I'll start by thanking all those who helped on the show and in the background. I mean, everybody. There's been a bunch of them, and I do mean a bunch, a lot more than people know, more than the admins and others. I found out that a lot of things were going on in the background, and this is my own personal runaround. Mostly nasty posts were put up and then removed, only when I wasn't watching. like in the middle of the night and stuff, and here and there during the day, knowing I was going someplace or whatever. It didn't matter. Anyway, when I say nasty, denigrating, you know, trash can thing, the chatter I couldn't hear, and I heard, but I did hear it wasn't nice, so nice either. There are some people that know how to listen. So I decided to change all of this. Passwords, access, and those who could be doing things. Don't know who it was. Nobody got a screenshot or copied nothing, and so I'm kind of in the dark in a way on that. But I don't take just one source in this. Second part. Last time, there was a split. I had to start over from scratch, pretty much. Wasn't nothing left. So I didn't let anybody know this was coming. No one played me, used me, or told me what to do. I cleaned the house. I did this on my own in a lot of ways for reasons that some people can understand and others may or may not. Now, the fun part of this is that I have been accused of a bunch of stuff. And my qualifying this is goes right here. For all those who are wondering, I've been getting it from two sides, Neil's and Tommy's. And, here I am stuck in the middle with it. And that is not a cool place to be. So consequently, my situation is very simple. I decided, therefore, CB is now going to be neutral. Somebody got something to say. They need to. They feel that making a post is correct. Then, basically, it gets posted. In other words, a level playing field for both of these sides. Equal posting of the info. Either chooses to send us. Okay. Now, I'm not looking at covering news today, but I don't know where my guest is at either. Let me see what I can find here. Ah, there we go. You can probably hear me clunking on my ready-mix typewriter. This is getting interesting. All right. My guest says he's called in and is on the line. You can hear me. Okay. Come on now. There we go. Oh, man. There we go. Learning this is fun. I haven't blown anything up yet or killed any computers, so I figure I'm doing all right. Let's see what we got here. Ah. Oh boy, yeah, technical difficulties. At least the music was decent. All right, here we go. Now I have a phone number. Let's see where he comes in at. Don't argue with me. Right. I'm looking for. Interesting. All right. This is interesting because I don't seem to be able to get this guy's phone number to pop up in my face. Well, this is interesting. I'm not sure how to get to our guest. Got a lot of 800s, 200s, 900s. Don't see you anywhere on here. This is interesting. All right. And I thought I knew. Oh, wait a minute. There it is. Okay.
There you are.
Yes, there I am. And you are now live on Cosmic Voice Radio for what there is left of it. An hour and 22 minutes, what we got.
Okay.
So, here's how this is. Joe is a guy who's an expert in legalistics. That can answer some questions and intends to supply some information. I got a hold of him sort of by accident on our tribal law class. Now, you can call it accidental if you'd like, but what he has to offer is awesome. Joe, you have the floor, my man.
Well, thank you, everybody. My name is Joe Esquivel. I am a licensed private investigator. License with Texas Department of Public Safety. So last night we were talking about different issues pertaining to foreclosure, securitization. There's a lot of information that is out there. There is a misunderstanding as to what is going on. But first and foremost, I would like to just a quick disclaimer that today we're just talking about entertainment, education, information about law and how people can cope with their own legal needs. However, legal educational information is not the same thing as legal advice. I am not an attorney. I am not giving legal advice. So If you wish to consult an attorney, if you want professional assurance that any information or your interpretation of it is appropriate to your own particular situation, I encourage you to go find an attorney. You will be treated like everybody else, just a number. So with that being said, let's get started. Foreclosure today is still running rampant. Regardless of what society says, the institutions are still seeking to take as many houses as possible. They're still foreclosing. And the truth is that the parties that are doing the foreclosures have not always acquired rights pursuant to statutory requirements of law. So, right now, our job is to just educate the public. So, right now, what we're doing is letting people know that foreclosure is real. The parties that are coming to take your house, they haven't always acquired rights as they're supposed to. They come forth saying, well, we're coming first. Coming forth as a person entitled to enforce. However, right now, the judges are all probate. Not all 99.9% of them. So, today, I'd like to answer any questions anybody has regarding securitization because what you think you know is not necessarily what is true and accurate. Many times I have people ask me, Joe, they sold my loan. Well, my first question is, do you understand what constitutes a loan? Do you understand the instruments that are required in order to create this loan? Because when you say they sold my loan, they sold it 10 times, they sold it 100 times, you're just guessing. Have you looked at your tangible promissory note? And do you understand what your tangible promissory note is, what it represents? Your tangible promissory note evidences the debt. It is your debt, which is that intangible obligation, something that you can't touch, which is your promise to pay future payments. If you were to take a look at your note, on line 1 or line 2, it says, I, Billy Bob, promise to pay for a loan I have received. Okay. First sentence on your note says, for a loan I have received. That's past tense. When did you receive that loan before you signed these documents? These contracts that you signed are put in front of you at closing, and you may or may not have an attorney there, and he may or may have not read those contracts. And I would venture to say that 99% of those attorneys that are representing the homeowner have not thoroughly read the contract. They just look at it, yeah, it looks good to me, yeah, everything's good, go ahead and sign it. But I would venture to say if they were questioned as to what those documents were, what those documents represented, they would be hard-pressed to answer that. When we're talking about, this is your American dream. You're selling the right to future payment obligation. Right, that is what is bought and sold every single day. Your promise to pay, I promise to pay for the next 360 months. That is what is bought and sold. Now, the homeowner is under the impression that they're selling the note. However, in fact, it is not the note that is actually sold every time. They sell an intangible record, something that you cannot touch. Tangible means you can touch it, you can feel it. All right? That is what you sign at the closing table, your tangible promissory note. Debt evidence is a debt, which is an intangible obligation, something you cannot, the right to receive future payments of the game. And then you have a security instrument being either called a mortgage or a deed of trust, or if you're in the state of Georgia, a security deed. Now, those instruments are an alternate means of payment. And after closing, and after you sign that security instrument, they take the original instrument and go file it with the county recorder's office. The reason for that is giving constructive notice to the world that a transaction has taken place. So now when they send the mortgage or your deed of trust or your security deed to the county recorder's office, it's filed, indexed, and recorded. Now you have an encumbrance upon your property, and you have a proper prospective property. Now, if it were to just stay like that, it would be all peachy keen. The problem is, it does not all stay like that. The majority of the mortgages that are out there, they sell. They sell them to the secondary market. This market is made up of investors. The investors can be teacher pension funds, police funds, 401k, hundreds of other investors, institutional investors, individual investors. All right. They all invest into the secondary market. Now, right now, they tell you that your loan has been sold, the loan has been securitized, but very seldom has your loan been securitized properly. They lead you to believe one thing. However, what is happening behind the doors is something completely different. So I would challenge everyone to understand, if you're getting foreclosed upon, to get a chain of title analysis. All right, so what is a chain of title analysis? Well, a chain of title analysis shows what was to be done, what was done, and what was not done pursuant to statutory requirements of law. And when you look at a true and factual chain of title analysis, you will be amazed at all of the wrongdoing that have been uncovered. You then use all of these wrongdoings and all of these fraudulent transactions that were to take place, that did not take place, and that did take place, and you need to put them as a foundation for any action going forward. This way, whether it is either a judicial action or a non-judicial action or an administrative process, whatever you, however you want to use the information, you will be able to use it. But it's very, very important to lay a good foundation to find out what was to happen to my loan, what did happen to my loan. Because when they come forth to take your property, what they tell you usually does not happen. So this is one of the reasons that we do a chain of title analysis. We do an affidavit of fact. And this affidavit of fact is done by a licensed private investigator. They cannot dispute the facts. They don't like the facts, but they're hard to dispute. When people start questioning, well, what was to take place, Joe? And then they look at what was to take place, and they say, wait a minute, that didn't happen. That didn't take place. I didn't receive any notification of this. So now people say, wait a minute, I need more information. You know, I'm looking at this chain of title analysis, and it's breaking down all of these instruments. I thought when they sold my loan, it was just a piece of paper that got sold. And they did everything correctly. The truth of the matter is that greed is what drives the industry. That almighty dollar. So, no, they did not follow instruction. We have access to many of the governing documents that are in these residential mortgage-backed securities. They file these documents with the Security Exchange Commission. Now, some of these we are unable to get into. However, others were able to look at the document, and the document named the party. They name the sponsor or the seller. They name the depositor. All right? They name the trustee. They give dates on which transactions are to take place. But nobody follows them. So, again, understanding everything is what we're going to try to do. We're going to try to educate you over the next couple of weeks or months, just give you information and give you bite-sized pieces as to what was to happen, what did happen. You know, what does it mean when somebody says that something was to take place according to the pooling and servicing agreement? And this is what we'll go through. When you understand that these documents give verbiage as to what was to happen. Now, the bank is going to say that you're not in, you don't have any interest, you're a third party. I concur. But if you use the pooling and servicing agreement or the prospective supplement, all right, showing evidence of transactions that were to take place, that is how you use the pooling and servicing agreement. Because your mortgage may be in a trust, your intangible payment obligation. All right. Being with that group of assets, it would cease to exist. So you are a partner. You are a party to the myth that they said that that trust was to be governed by this pooling and servicing agreement. So when you look at the verbiage within there, it talks about conveyances of mortgages. It talks about governing the law. What laws govern these documents? So my job is to bring this information into light. Now, additionally, a couple of years ago, we created charts. And the charts, we're able to show about 80% of the time in a one-page representation of transactions that were to take place or what did take place. Because the chain of title analysis is written in legalese,
and it's written in legalese,
so it's very specific. it's not written in general terms. Yeah, if we talk about obligations, we talk about, are they tangible, something you can touch, or are they intangible, something that you cannot touch? When you're talking about specific parties, again, it's very specific.
And hey, Joe?
Yes.
Seems we have some kind of an echo problem. I'm not sure how to fix that. They've suggested you turn your computer down. You got your computer on?
How was that?
That sounds great. Try it. Go for it.
Okay, good. So, yeah, I just turned it down. So now, when people understand about legalese, well, we're talking about the language in which the courts are going to listen to you. You know, you don't need to be an attorney to articulate arguments in fighting your foreclosure. You just need a little help. You just need a push. The homeowner has the most knowledge about the transactions because he was there at closing. However, many times if this goes to court, you have someone that claims to be an attorney for the bank that purports to have all of this information. But the truth is that he was not there. And documents that they're putting onto court record look damning and against the homeowner. And the courts buy into it. For example, let's take a document saying an assignment of mortgage. This is put into the courts many, many times. And the bank attorney tells the judge, Your Honor, we have an assignment. The problem is that that judge does not understand what that document is. And the truth is that if the judge were to understand that an assignment of mortgage, okay, the whole purpose of filing an assignment of mortgage is to memorialize transaction pertaining to the tangible promissory note and the acquiring of rights. It does not cause the sale, nor does it cause the acquiring of rights. That is done pursuant to statutory requirements of law, which many times has not happened. The purpose of filing that document is to create a breadcrumb trail. And that is how they use the document. However, if one were to understand what the closing date of the trust means, all right, and were to truly understand the laws that say you must follow the way that the trust was set up, then the judges, you know, could look at these documents different. All right, because when you're trying to put a document filed into public record, for example, in 2015, and this document purports to do an assignment of mortgage from a loan that was done in 2005, okay, and they're going to do this assignment from party A, from the lender to the trustee of a trust, all right, so you're doing just a simple arm's-length transaction from party B to party E. Now, all of these other transactions in the middle, they've left out. They've left out every other party to the transaction that would have made this a bankruptcy remote transaction. In order for this to be a RIMIC, which is a real estate investment mortgage conduit, which is a pass-through entity, and it's a pass-through entity meaning so that there is not double taxation or triple taxation of taxes every time there is a sale, all of the taxes were deferred until it got to the investor. That's why they call it a pass-through. But one of the requirements for having a pass-through conduit is that it be bankruptcy remote. And in order to be bankruptcy remote, there must be a minimum of two arm's-length transactions. So going from the lender to the trustee for the trust is an impossibility, as well as that 99% of the times that they're doing these assignments from the lender to the trustee, the closing date has long since passed years ago. And yet the courts don't look at that. And it's very disturbing. If you understand that in order for this trust to be a trust, all right, they need to comply with certain rules. All right, you need to look at the Securities Act of 1933, the Security Exchange Act of 1934, because whenever the SEC, which is the Security Exchange Commission, goes after any bank or after any of these parties fraud, these are the two acts that they bring up. Because when you look at the Securities Act of 1933, it was set up after we had the Great Depression from 1929 to 1932. And President Roosevelt set that up because so many businesses and people went out of business and were destitute. So he created this act, and the act requires that investors, that were to receive financial and other significant information concerning the investments that were being offered for public sale. And it was also to prohibit deceit, misrepresentations, and other fraud in the sale of securities. So the way it is done is through the disclosure of important financial information. So that means that if you're an investor and you're going to invest into a security instrument, be in a special purpose vehicle, all right, well, then you need to get information. You need to get a 424B5 prospectus. And, yes, they're hundreds of pages long. You know, they can be anywhere from 250 to 800 pages. But the purpose is to outline the information. However, we all know very few people read it. Now, while the Security Exchange Commission requires that the information that is provided is accurate, okay, again, it doesn't guarantee any information. All they're saying is you're supposed to give all proper information. So that is for the investors. Now, when you look at the Securities Act of the Security Exchange Act of 1934, the purpose of that was to regulate the secondary market trading. And those were the trading that happened between persons that were often unrelated to the issuer, meaning like from broker to a dealer. You know, from party, it's all B2B, which is business-to-business transaction. So whenever there's any fraudulent transactions or trading that the SEC actually investigates, these are the two acts that they go after, Securities Act of 1933, Exchange Act of 1934. Because, again, you can prove fraud. The problem is the government doesn't want to go after the banks. They do not want to go after all of these companies, because these companies have hundreds and hundreds of lobbyists who pay hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars to promote the welfare of the banks. It is not the people that voted Congress that has the power. It is the 360 people that are running Congress that have the power. And it should be the other way around. When you look at today, and you go back 20 years, we have a night and day difference as to the, how the government is operating today and how it operated years ago. Today, nobody wants to take, how do I put it? They don't want to take ownership, okay, of doing something. They want the government to be in charge. And everybody's asking, I want big government. I want the government to tell me what to do. I want the government to tell me about health care. I want the government in charge. I just want to sit back and just reap all the benefits. And that's fine. You know what? If you're unemployed, fine. You get Section 8 help. You get a free cell phone. You get Obamacare. But for the working class, it doesn't work like that. You know, and it's a working class that is getting foreclosed upon. It is a working class that lost millions of jobs. All right, and as a result of the loss of all these jobs going to China and Taiwan and all these other third world countries, that the American dream has suffered. So today we need to educate the public. We need to let them know. You know, there's things that you can do. You know, don't let the fat lady sing. You need to dispute what is going on in foreclosure. You need to stand up and be counted. The majority of the people say, oh, I owe, I can't pay, I'm just going to move on. But the crazy part is that in a lot of these big cities that the banks have foreclosed upon, you see entire neighborhoods that are just empty, boarded up houses. What the heck did the bank foreclose upon all of these people for if they're not going to do anything to the community? These buildings become eyesores. They become, you know, haven for drug dealers. So it's really very troubling what's been going on. Very troubling.
Hey, Joe, there's some questions in here.
Sure.
There's a lot of people who have lost their homes, and they'd like to know how if they can get them back.
The truth is, that is an uphill battle. It really, really is. Again, it's only recently that we've had cases being overturned, you know. It's been crazy as far as, like, out in California. We, you know, they just had that second case. We had Glaske, and then after Glaske, there was another case that backed up Glaske. And right now, the courts are just looking at this. There's, it was Yarvona, I believe Yarvona versus Wells Fargo. I'm screwing up the name. But right now, because of the cases that are being overturned, you know, we just had like four cases in California in which they've been vacated and dismissed. They were originally given in favor of the banks, and now the banks have lost. But it is an uphill battle. So if you have been foreclosed upon, again, the odds are against you getting your house back. I'm not going to tell you it's an easy fight. You need to check with the laws of your state. Some of the states do not have wrongful foreclosure statutes. Some do. You need to check the redemption period within your state. And then you need to look at the type of causes of action am I looking at. You know, we're looking at unconscionable contract, breach of fiduciary duty. What are we looking at? You need to show injury, and how do you show injury? You know, you can't just take a blanket complaint because it worked for Billy Bob and think that's going to work for John Doe. You need to look at your set of circumstances. Did you do everything in your power before you got foreclosed upon? You know, was your case adjudicated correctly? You know, many times once the court has adjudicated your case, right now you've got rules of res judicata, issues of preclusion, meaning that you cannot bring an action against the bank. It's already been dealt with. The court doesn't want to hear anything. So, again, it depends on each and every different situation. But post-foreclosure is a lot harder than pre-foreclosure. If you're in pre-foreclosure and they have not sold your house yet, and they have not gotten a summary judgment, all right, I would say fight. Do not roll over. Do not let the fat lady sing. I'm open to any questions that anyone has, Drake, so let's take some questions.
Okay, well, I got one question. I hear that if the prosecutors, the servicers of the loan, or however you want to look at that, do not have title deed, then they cannot prove ownership and have no right to require a mortgage, payments, or anything else from you, from a person who owns it or is buying.
Again, you have to look at whether you're in a judicial.
If they do not have title deed, that they do not have proof of ownership.
I understand what you're saying, okay? However, understand that very few people have actually accepted title to their property. You know, when you get your warranty deed or whatever deed that you get to your property, that is the deed. That shows ownership. That shows legal title. You are correct. The bank does not have that. But again,
well,
what the courts are looking at is different. The courts, because many times the banks say, you know what, I don't need the note. I'm acting as holder of the note. I'm coming forth as Pete, person entitled to enforce. So the bank grants them summary judgment. Now, in order to overturn summary judgment, you need to show issues of material fact. And many people don't know how to do this.
I understand. The question I had was, if somebody does not have title deed, in other words, the mortgage holder should have a title deed showing a hold pending compensation or something of this nature, similar to a title on a car. And that's kind of stretching it a little bit, but similarly, what I have heard has been happening is that a lot of people who find themselves in problems have asked the question, can they prove ownership? Do they have the title deed? And if they don't, then they don't have proof of ownership.
Again, it's you can't always just, I understand 100% the question. However, I'm going to defer that and say that what the courts recognize is not always what the homeowner recognizes. Yes, you have legal title to your property. You have the warranty deed. However, the bank is coming forth using your security instrument and a due-on-sale clause within that security instrument to foreclose. The problem is that they're foreclosing using a document that is personal property. It's not real property. It's an alternate means of collection. That's what a mortgage is. It's an alternate means. If I can't collect on the note, then I can collect through another instrument that is supposed to be attached to the payment stream to the tangible promissory note, which evidences the debt. But again, what was to take place and what actually takes place, it's night and day. And this is why I encourage everyone to get a chain of title analysis, to understand the transactions that were to take place that didn't take place. that's something that most people don't have a clue about. If more people stood up and did all over, we'd be much better off. Because many times, it's not the attorneys that are winning cases. It's the pro se litigant. Because the pro se litigant has lost everything. He stands to lose his house, his dream. His family's going to fall apart. While you have this attorney that is just worried about keeping his job. He knows he has to show up to court next week or tomorrow and go in front of that judge again. And if he says the wrong thing, he's going to piss off the judge.
Okay.
The pro se litigant could care less. This is his house. This is his family. He will do whatever it takes to keep it.
Understood. Understood. One of the things I heard, too, in the tribal law class was that a lot of these people will submit paperwork to be put into the record and not have a wet signature on any of it. And I understand that that screws things up from what you said in the law class.
Yes. Again, many times they put documents, again, when they file a complaint, they'll put one document in. And then a year later, when it goes to trial, they come up with another document. And unless you have a forensic expert, document examiner that can say, wait a minute, this paper is from, 2015, and here's who made the paper, and then looking at the signature, this is not a wedding signature. This was done by, a printer. Again, you need to dispute everything. You need to not roll over. The problem is very few people stand up and fight. You know that,
yeah.
Greg.
That's as I get it, from what I've seen, this is the new norm where you just let everything go. You do not participate in the system in any way, shape, or form. Supposedly, this is the new way to be. You just don't actually become or be anything. It really concerns me that that too few of the up and coming generation have any aspirations to accomplish the things that their parents couldn't, or that I couldn't, or that we didn't get done for whatever reason.
They don't even vote.
Well, the other part that gets me, what you're doing is a key to it. But the thing I'm looking at is that there are tons, and I mean a whole bunch of people out there that would be more than willing to help somebody who does want to do something. So, I see that miss, the counsel and wisdom of elders or however you want to look at it. My other question is, should I share your contact? This is a nice one. Contact info?
Sure. I'll tell you what. If anybody wants more information, they can go to the website.
Okay.
And the website is Mortgage Compliance Investigations with an S .com. And they can click on what a chain of title analysis is. I've written a number of different articles.
Now, wait a minute.
We've got articles in there.
Mortgage Compliance?
Mortgage
Compliance Investigators?
Investigations.
Now, wait a minute.
Here, hold on a second. I will type it in 1 second.
Okay. .com. All right.
One minute.
All right.
There you go. I just sent it to you.
Okay.
In addition, I've got something else for you. 1 minute.
All right. I'm gonna post this stuff on.
Okay. I also sent you a website to a private member association. And the reason for the private member association is because we're not attorneys. We don't purport to act like an attorney. Okay. However, there is a private member association out there that works with pro se litigants as their back office. Because a lot of pro se litigants, they don't know how to write a complaint. They don't know how to do an answer. All right.
And they're scared. And they're scared to write their name.
Correct. However, this private member association works with members. Now, in order for them to work with you, you must be a member of this private member association.
Uh-huh.
It's recognized by IRS as an unincorporated association. It's covered
uh-huh.
under the 1st, the 4th, the 5th, and the 15th Amendment.
Okay.
But it is a lifesaver for many pro se litigants to receive assistance. So I would encourage someone that wants to fight, that doesn't know how to fight, to take a second look and say, hey. All right.
Okay. Now, is there any cost involved?
Yes. Right now, the cost for the membership is $150. Okay. Now, that is not the cost for the program. That is to be a member so that we can talk to you. So, again, that we can share ideas. As far as the program, it depends. One, you have to qualify. We have to see, was your loan secured? Was it securitized? Was it sold to the secondary market? If it wasn't, many times we cannot work with you. So if it is, you know, so there's some work that needs to be done beforehand. So we're in the middle right now of revamping the website so that people will be able to submit information online as well as documents. So we should have that, the updated website probably within another week or two. But right now they can go on. It's up and running. And, again, it provides a lot of good information as to what is a private member association? Because many times, again, people think that they have to go to an attorney and they're scared to death. Because you go to an attorney and you're going to spend $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000.
Yeah.
And the attorney doesn't always give you what you're expecting.
Okay.
Right? Many times, those attorneys, all they do is just say, don't worry about it. I got it handled. But the question is, what do they really have handled? All right? When you understand that, you know, people need to know what is involved. What am I going to get? What are you going to provide? So the PMA is the back house. Office for pro se litigants that are members, and they provide all of the complaint answers, responses, motions, discovery, whatever is needed. But again, they only work with members. But for someone that has tried writing complaints and they're like, wait a minute, I saw this on the internet. And I'm going to go for quiet title, and without understanding what they're doing, without understanding, for example, quiet title. Quiet title is like yin and yang. It is both a cause of action and a remedy. I've seen hundreds of quiet title complaints where they invite everybody, including their mother, all right, to come on board and get in this complaint. MERS, Bank of America, Aquin, Green Tree. And then halfway in the middle of that complaint that they've done for quiet title, they say, you know what, MERS has nothing to do with this. Bank of America has nothing to do with this. Wait a minute, you invited them to your quiet title party, now you're kicking them out. So you know, this
yeah,
is
there,
something
there,
that
there
people,
is,
need to be,
people need to be. People need to be educated, and that's a real problem.
They do it, and this is why, again, I've done videos. I've done, as you've just recently found out, again, able to view a number of these videos that I've done. I've written articles, and the whole purpose is to
educate the public.
There's, it does one no good to have this information if you can't share it.
Or use it.
Or use it. And again, that's what I'm looking. I'm looking at all of these hundreds of thousands and millions of people out there that want the information, but they don't know where to get it.
Okay.
And then once you have it, how do I use it?
Okay.
You know, someone says, okay, Joe, I have a complaint. What do I do? Well, we've created a video and an instruction sheet. If you can't read, you can watch a video as to how do I file my complaint? What is required? What happens after I file? Nobody tells you that. Once you file the complaint, they've got X number of days to answer. All right? Meantime, all right, if you used a process server, all right, you get in the mail an affidavit of service. I've talked to probably half a dozen people in the last couple of months, and they said, well, what is this paper? Nobody's explained to them that they need to take this affidavit of service, make a copy of it, and then take the original and file it with the court. And the purpose for filing it with the court is now the bell starts tolling on the time frame that the opposing counsel needs to answer.
Okay, well, there's another problem in all this that I have not heard addressed by anybody. So I'm going to pick on you.
Sure.
I have found a lot of people have submitted paperwork and whatnot to the court, and it all gets lost.
Again, that's the whole purpose. When you go to the court, you're going to make three copies. All right, and the reason is you're going to have a copy for you, a copy for the judge, and a copy for the court.
Okay.
And they're going to stamp all three copies. And you're going to leave them two, and you're going to take one with you. You're going to take the one with you because now it has a cause number on it. And you refer to that cause number.
Okay, well, the advice everybody's been getting is submit your paperwork to the clerk of the court. That's it. I have suggested that they take it also up and submit it to the judge.
Well, you're not going to get to the judge. He's going to have, you know, his little, gatekeepers in front of him. That's why I said, when you go to file your complaint, you don't just hand it over.
Yeah.
You're taking it, like I said, three copies. Why? Because you now have a timestamp copy from the clerk of the court showing you have it timestamped. Boom. All right? So now when you're serving
the opposing party. Okay, now do you get that? Hold on a minute. Do you get that on all three copies? That timestamp?
Yes. Right.
Okay.
They stamp all of your copies. All right. And the reason I tell people is, you know, to take three copies, all right, is this way, leave one for the judge. Because you don't know when he's going to have, and many times they'll have a special, like, mailbox for the judges.
Okay.
And you put a copy right in there. Boom. So now you've got a copy that's entered into court record that the clerk of the court is going
to
scan in.
Let's
you put the copy for the judge in his mailbox, and you're going to take a copy with you home. And now you're going to take that copy and make copies of it to each of the defendants.
Okay, here's the problem. Even that has not worked in the past.
What state?
Let's see here. Wait a minute. Oklahoma is one that I remember off the top. Hey, you're digging into my head pretty hard. Vaguely mentioned, okay? And the problem is that these people go out of their way to make sure that your stuff does not come up.
And I concur with you again.
So the copy that you – hold on a minute. So the copy that we would have as an individual – would show that It was submitted.
Correct.
Okay, now, correct. If it's submitted but it disappears, then you got to make another copy?
Again, yes, you have. If you have a timestamp showing the clerk of the court stamped it, boom, this date, this time, it's been accepted.
Uh-huh.
I would go back down there and, again, make a copy and say, listen, I've got a stamp here showing that you've accepted it. Where is it? Because, again, you're going to have the opposing party served. And then once they're served and you get an affidavit of service from your service processor, you're going to file that with the courts. Now the bell starts tolling. Now they've got a set number of days in which to answer.
Okay.
If they don't answer, all right, then you would file a motion for default judgment.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now let me ask you another question. Let me ask you another question here.
Sure.
This guy tried certified mail. I told him to use a server.
No. Yes.
A service to serve the litigants. And most of the people that I've talked to don't have the money to do that.
And again, remember that a process server is an officer of the court. And it would be well worth the money that you have to pay to get them service. It does you no good to put it in the mail. Why? Because the janitor, they would claim, picked it up or, you know, it sat on somebody's desk. There is no proof that you got it to the party that it's supposed to go to.
Okay, now
so
one
you
person.
Need to use,
well, one person actually used a server.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still stuck.
So what was the
result
after they were served?
At one point or another, what I'm thinking is that maybe they need to be taken to a higher court.
No, well, again,
stand before
I would
the judge and show cause why they are interfering with the legal process or something of that nature.
Again, it just depends on the county.
Okay.
I know in some states, you know, Tennessee, Missouri, some of these small counties, they don't even have internet. I mean, they're really behind the times. They really are.
I have to use satellite up here.
Yeah, and I totally understand. I do. And yes, there are some counties where the pro se litigant is really going to have his work cut out for him. But they have to understand nothing is handed to you. You must fight for it.
Okay.
Look at all of our rights. You know, if you don't fight for the rights, you're not going to acquire any of them. They're not just going to hand you the right to bear arms. You know, you need to take that right. I'm
just
using that for an example. So
I understand,
so you just
but it's good
one
example.
Of my nerves. You know?
What's well, one of the things that I stand for?
Good, me too. I mean, right now, we've got so many left people on the left that want the government to, you know, take the guns and tell everybody, here's the health care you're going to get. You know, and you've got working class people that are clamoring, saying, hey, wait a minute. Maybe you want the government to run your life. I don't want the government to run my life. I want to make decisions that I am willing to live for and die for. You know?
Yes, I do.
I don't like that when the government tells me, Mr. Esquivel, you need to take Obamacare. Okay, fine, I signed up for it, all right? My cost went from over $600 a month to $1,200. $1,200,
yeah,
and I got somebody that's not working or an illegal alien that gets this crap for free and a free cell phone. I don't want the government telling me what I can do. I want to make that decision. And the same thing with, you know, if I'm going to fight a fight.
Okay.
You know, I want to have the same rules apply to the bank that apply to me. So if you're going to charge me with something, fine, you're going to get charged.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be willing to stand up and know when you go into the ring of whatever fight it is. You know, for example, for me, it's the fight of foreclosure.
Okay.
I know that the opposing side, they're going to take some punches and they're going to be swinging at me. And I fully expect that. I'm going to take hits to the gut. But I'm just not going to stand there and just be a doormat, you know, a punching bag. I'm going to stand up and, you know, I'm going to get my shots in.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to say, is that all you got? Let's do it again.
Okay. The some people are even having trouble putting up the postage, you know, to send things. And that's upon the request, I guess, discovery of the litigants or whatever. The question I have is there a manner in which these things can be kind of forced that you're aware
again,
of?
There's, what you need to look at is your rules of civil procedure. So whatever.
Well, when they don't abide by what I'm saying is when they don't abide by any of it, and I mean any of it at all. it gets difficult for people, especially when they know that you don't have the cash to come out and take matters into your own hands.
It is tough.
What would be the alternative, or you know?
The truth is that there is. Other than just standing up for yourself and fighting, and you know, it gets very difficult because you're going to have to pay to live somewhere.
Okay.
And you know, so it just becomes, if you lose your house, you're going to have to rent someplace, or you're going to have to go live with a family member. So yes, it's going to cost you some sort of dollars to fight. It is. So the question is, do I spend it on myself and litigate this, or do I go hire an attorney? So you need to just, you know, get out a piece of paper and put down, you know, what are the pros and cons of both? What am I actually looking at? Am I looking,
I understand.
You know,
I understand all that.
But it's tough.
The problem that I'm running across is that a lot of these people didn't do anything to begin with. That's the first main thing. They did not stand up for themselves in any way, shape, or form.
Correct.
Secondly, okay, and I usually end up hearing that usually way too late. Problems that I have run across are primarily financial. These people can't afford an attorney. They cannot afford filing fees. You know, there's not much of anything that they can do in terms of what they have to work with. Now, by that, I'm talking about they're living on Social Security, and that's it. Barely able to make a payment or whatever. Some people have had.
I totally understand.
Okay, and some people have had the situation where both people living there, man and wife, lost their jobs, so they're really, you know, they're flipping burgers at Mickey D's if they're lucky. And so the consequences that are coming out is that the financial system seems to have a problem with little people enjoying some of the things that they take for granted. And my questions in terms of, you know, without getting into the intricacies of applicable law, whether it's civil procedure or whatever, and I have heard, not a recording, but I have heard reports of people saying, so, and this comes from the bench. And in these cases, these hardcore cases or hard cases, however you want to look at it, are the ones that I would like to be able to offer some form of out for these people. That's one of the things I'm really looking for, and so are a lot of other people.
Right, and I totally understand. However,
okay, now I also heard another thing that if somebody falsifies paperwork or whatever, commits fraud in some form or another, that the person that was evicted, et cetera, foreclosed upon, can come back for financial benefit that should have been theirs in the first place.
Again, you're going to have to check on the, you know, statutes of, you know, the DOS mill in which they are located at.
Okay, that was one of the big things that I stipulate is go look up your local laws. Borrow somebody's
exactly.
computer. Have somebody help you in terms of that. Find out what you're dealing
right.
with. Then you got something to work with. A lot of these people are just, you know, a lot of these people are just, they set me and the cat out on the curb, you know.
And you're right. I've talked to many of them. And I, right now, what many people, again, I understand the hundreds of thousands, especially of our senior citizens, that are on fixed incomes, and they're trying to make it. And this is why, again, one of the reasons the PMA came into existence, because, yes, there was a cost. However, right now, there is nothing that can be done for free. Just because of the databases that need to be incurred, the legal teams that need to be, you know, put together. So there is some sort of cost. But as far as, again, if somebody is foreclosed upon,
we're also dealing with a problem with the system itself.
Yes. Yes, and we need to change the system.
Okay. Well, these are some of the questions that I've been getting from people. What is the correct procedure so that I don't have the problems where every time I get paperwork in there, it gets lost? You know, the dog ate my homework is getting kind of old.
Right. And again, I can't stress enough, again, there are some counties and jurisdictional areas where it's run rampant.
Yeah.
So, I would tell everybody, you know, when you go down there, have an extra copy available. So if they say I lost it, fine. You know what? I've already got this time-stamped one. I'm going to bring another copy down to you. Now, what you've done is you actually have an original that was stamped. Do you follow me?
Yeah, I know.
So when you go over to the courthouse, instead of taking three, make four originals, right?
Yeah.
So this way, they lose it. They're going to say, wait, is this a cop? Oh, no. I came here with four originals. I gave you two. I kept two. Here's another original. Here's the cost number. You already have time-stamped, dated. I've already served opposing party. I'm sorry you lost yours, but you know what? I've got another one for you. And by the way, there's only 10 more days in which opposing counsel has to answer.
Okay. Now, when they don't answer, the next step is to ask the judge for what?
Default judgment.
Okay. And what that does is that stops the foreclosure?
Well, what that means, remember, there is no, again, you need to look at your statutes for the jurisdiction
right.
of which you're in.
Understood.
There is no guarantee that any complaint will stop a foreclosure.
Uh-huh, okay.
So when you understand that, if you're in bankruptcy, that'll stop foreclosure. If you're in a loan modification, that'll stop foreclosure. Now, yes, there's other things that can be done, but there is no guarantee.
Ah, okay.
And this is why you need to go on the offense rather than being on the defense whenever you can.
Okay. I'm with you 100%.
You know,
the situations that I keep running across, you know, are just pretty much what I've stipulated. They don't got the money for postage, let alone for a filing fee or something.
Well, unfortunately, I hate to, you know, I don't mean to sound, callous, but
yes.
It's a rough world. I mean, nobody is going to give us anything. So we have to learn, as our parents did, we need to take back.
A lot of people can people file, you know, that they file a motion that shows that they are
indigent? Yes. Yes.
And does that help usually or no?
Again, it depends upon.
Depending, I mean, I understand depending on where, but I'm saying generally.
Right. Generally, yeah, there is a lot of times that they can get an exception where they don't have to pay, you know, $400 to file a complaint. You know, they
Thank
would show financial, showing that they don't have the money to afford it. And, yes, it can help them financially as far as, you know, they can still do their paperwork, but it's not going to cost them as much.
Okay. Okay.
And then, you know, for example, if they were to use, say, a sheriff's office rather than a process server to serve the opposing counsel.
Okay.
So, you know, there are ways to get around it. You just need to be thinking outside of the box. The problem is most of us are so used to having someone tell us what to do, when in fact we need to get off of our butts and start doing this on our own. Start asking questions. The worst question I've ever heard is the one that was never asked.
Yes.
Because if nothing changes, Drake, nothing changes.
I understand that. That's what this show is all about. We're trying to initiate
exactly.
the changes.
Show is about cosmic change. Change in the universe.
Yep.
Let's create the ripples effect that you talk about.
So what you told me is that they can go and look at that PMA without joining and see some stuff.
Right, they can go look there. Again, they can send me an email. They can go to the website, put a request, and, hey, can I look at any of these videos that you've created? Yes, you can. Shoot me an email.
Okay.
You know, put a request in on the website. You'd like to see some videos. They're not going to cost you a penny.
Okay. Well, there's a reason that I'm doing this particular show. First of all, everybody decided I was too stupid to do this, and I managed to get it done anyway. Then the second part of this is very simple. If we can cause a combinational problem for the financial industry that handles mortgages through their own negligence or incompetence, whichever fits, then we can, as people, come back up to a place where the playing field gets leveled eventually. Now, I'm not talking about right now, but from what I'm seeing and things I'm hearing, the situation that everybody's in, everybody is really nervous. Everybody's really concerned. And so the thing that I'm looking at is that these people as a group, and I mean as a whole, are in a flux situation. They don't know if martial law is going to be declared. They don't know if the federal government's going to say, well, no, you don't own, you didn't build this. You don't own it. It's ours. We're coming to take it. Or how this is going on. But I've noticed a change, not great, but big enough to mention. a lot of people have taken issue with candidates lately. One of those is Donald Trump. Another one is Hillary Clinton. Now, one of the two things I've seen is that let's say crookedness with the Clintons is affecting the capability of Clinton to just run wide open, no restraint. That's first. Then you got Bernie Sanders dividing the vote. Now, Trump's by himself. I think he's a bit, let's say, too forceful of a character in terms of his presentations he's made in some cases. However, he also is making promises. Now, one time, and this has been fairly recently, dealing, I believe, with Obamacare, there was a stipulation that these people made promises openly, publicly. They're not being held to those promises. So we are going to have to, as a people, clean house. Now, Trump would be a start, and I think a good one. Not the best, not the absolute best. I don't fully agree with some of the things, some of his stuff, but I do see things as changing, at least on that basis. I've noticed a difference. The Trump rallies have gone nonviolent. However, the let's say Democratic process last time, there was a bit of a problem on more than one occasion. And so this tells me that even the liberal ideology, whether it goes all the way to socialism or not, is beginning to self-destruct. What the people that I'm seeing in this country need to do, pay attention to people such as yourself, check the information that we can supply myself through my website, blog, Facebook page, or whatever, and put things together in such a manner that a person does not necessarily anymore need to fear standing up saying, you ain't doing this right, that's wrong to do this, and being heard. That's the big change that I'm, and people are beginning to say this. So I'm looking at this as a very succinct and very large change in attitude. It's no longer the situation where we will be subject to whatever is decided in Washington, D.C., or by some oligarch sitting in his princely tower somewhere and owns 50 businesses, that the idea of opening ourselves up to the control of these people was and is the wrong thing to do. And I'm beginning to see people begin to stand up and say no. And that to me, with all the years that I've been putting into this, is quite something. So that was my diatribe. Anyway,
I'll tell you, I agree with you on a lot of the things that you've said, as far as we're not going to find a perfect candidate.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. But I can also tell you that I don't want to go through another 4 or 8 years of the same old.
Now, the status quo is being hit hard.
Right. I mean, I understand, you know, and again, that while we tend to go towards one or the other, right now, you have to look at the lesser of the two evils.
Yeah.
Okay. I also know who repealed the Glass-Steagall Act in 1999. I also know that when they repealed the Glass-Steagall Act, it opened up the doors from Main Street to Wall Street. And they replaced it with the Gramsci-Biley Act. So I do understand the finances. I do understand what happened. I do understand that when all of the securitization started going and the banks were making billions and billions of dollars and all of these brokers and driving their Ferraris and Mercedes and not worrying about the little people. And now we're going to put somebody back in the house, you know, who was affiliated with the person that signed this bill. You know, so I don't want to go through this again. Yes,
okay.
It's scary for change, but if nothing changes, nothing changes.
Yeah. Well, the thing I'm looking at right now is two things. I'm running out of time, and I want to invite you back anytime you feel like it. If you want to send me any kind of webinar or information, I will post them. And it's up to you as to what phone number you might want. Your phone number's on the PMA then? Or your email address?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, their number, they just go at any of those websites.
Okay, what I'll do is I'll post this through and see where it ends up.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. Any of the links that you were sent yesterday, feel free to share them.
Okay. Okay.
Right now, they can go to YouTube and they can find all of these. I mean, they're not hidden.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure they see them. Believe me.
You know,
the thing is that I am out of time, so I got to go.
All right. Well, you have a great day.
And I sure appreciate you being on. I look forward to you coming back.
I will be back, possibly in about 4 weeks. Thank you so much,
Frank.
Have a great day.
You too. All right. There are some funny games going on that I'm looking at copying and posting. And the thing is that I understand there's been a break between within the Illuminati group itself. And at that break, some people decided to do the right thing. Supposedly, this is who Thomas is working with. And yet, I don't trust the Illuminati. Now, that's it. Anything that those people, that's Thomas and associates, wish to come up with in terms of officially coming out, I will post. I would be more than happy to post. Neil Keenan has sent me a whole bunch of things, and I posted them. Not necessarily that I absolutely agree with him, because I'm not sure what's going on. I'm not privy to all them little fun and games meetings behind the scene and whatnot. But what I want to do is let everybody know that I'm not going to stop and I ain't going to go away. And nobody is going to be in charge of this except me from now on. That you can take to the bank. We're going to go out with a song. Enjoy.